Recorded live in downtown Newtown, this is Rancho Notorious, a podcast about movies and other cool stuff. You can find this and all the other episodes of the show at funeralsandsnakes.net/Rancho Notorious. Everybody to episode number 2 of Rancho Notorious, a podcast about movies, well, and other cool stuff. I'm Dan Slevin, and with me here at Rancho Notorious is...
Kaylee.
Hi, Kaylee. How are you doing?
Good, thanks.
And with us in the studio is this week's guest host from the Dominion Post and News Talk ZB in Wellington. Please welcome Graham Tuckett.
Oh, kia ora, how are you?
Very, very well, thank you. Always a pleasure to have you here.
I'm just wigging out about your soundtrack theme. This is fantastic.
Well, yeah.
I know, it's real, it's just giddy-up stuff, I love it.
Today's episode is a comedy special, Taika Waititi and Jermaine Clement's vampire mockumentary, What We Do in the Shadows, is out this weekend across New Zealand. Australian listeners are going to have to wait till September for that particular film, and also the meta sequel 22 Jump Street goes into its second weekend here and opening weekend across the Tasman. This week's Australian correspondent is Chris Elena, and he'll be giving his impressions of the recent Sydney Film Festival and also telling us a little bit about his own short film that'll be coming out later on in the year. And also we'll be joined here online by David Geary from Vancouver, Canada, who has spent an evening with Oscar winner Oliver Stone at the Vancouver Biennale. But first, well, this is episode 2, so we've had an opportunity, we've launched, there's been some listeners, we've had 162 downloads, which is not a bad effort for the very first episode, and we'll presumably that means that we've got some feedback. Kaylee, what is in the mailbag?
Well, I just have to say, I'm very impressed once again by Fred Thompson. 3 tweet reviews this week. Boom. So let's start with that. We have a 2-word review, Fault in Our Stars, Pragmatic Sobfest. Felt slightly manipulative, but blown away by Shailene Woodley's performance.
Only slightly manipulative.
You stick a hose up a teenager's nose, you're going to get stars. It's just an old, old aphorism in Hollywood.
What? What We Do in the Shadows, Deadpan Delight, could not stop laughing to the point that I missed a few jokes. Hate that. It was too funny, yeah. Clearly.
One day we're going to have to actually...
How do you know there were jokes if you missed them?
Because other people were still laughing, maybe?
Okay, this is a slow reviewer, isn't it? It's a summon. I mean, if other people were laughing... Oh, forget it, I'm sorry. I'm going to get myself in trouble my first time out.
And 22 Jump Street, romantic bonding, taking the if it ain't broke... approach kind of worked, but lacked any originality.
Yeah, well, I'm very impressed by Fred Thompson, who is one of those listeners who sees everything, and somehow he must have been either at the Auckland premiere of What We Do in the Shadows, which was last Friday, I think, or at the Wellington hometown premiere last night. And
so his review's out on Twitter today.
Today, yeah, we received that today.
He was probably at the embassy last night.
Yeah, I'd say so.
And I've got to say,
he's a mystery man.
I thought the strength of 22 Jump Street was there was nothing original in it. I thought that was the whole point.
Yeah, and they knew all about it. But we can come to that later on.
Sorry, yeah, jumping ahead.
Speaking of 2-word reviews and where we're moving that direction, we got a lot of interesting suggestions. My favorites.
Yeah, because what was just for those people who are joining us late, we on the show that we used to do, we used to sign off each review with a 2-word signature, you know, summing up of a particular film, and we were thought, well, maybe we should do something new on this particular show. Maybe we should have a new motif. And the feedback, we threw it out to the listeners. Do you want a bit of nostalgia, the old thing, the safe, the tried and true, or do you want us to do something else? What have people said?
Well, we have several tweets from El Stevo, which was also on Facebook as well. So I'll read the whole series. Hey guys, great to have you back. Re-toured reviews. How about your own rating system? Like stars, only mucho betterer. Head honcho, must see. Rancho recommends, worth spending your dollar on. Midwestern. Okay.
Midwestern's good. It's like your average 3 stars. Yeah.
There's a Midwestern.
Midwestern. Okay.
Siesta time, unlikely to interrupt your sleep. And Dog Tucker should be put down immediately and fed to the hounds.
This is really idiosyncratic, and I think maybe after a couple of weeks, people will forget what they were supposed to be.
Yeah, maybe. And it's also my only concern about that is that it ends up being basically the same ratings every week, whereas with the two-word reviews, we had to come up with new stuff
I think
all
even
the time.
You went into quote once and said the whole idea of a star system was reductive, and I actually always agreed with you, despite the fact that I'm stuck with a star system
in what I
laughingly refer to as my career.
Exactly, and even the great God Ebert still had two thumbs up,
and he only had four to work with. At least I get five, you know.
Yeah.
And the lovely Reese Pie said, "Top work all involved. Liked the challenge of two-word review, but also see how you want to look forward, not back." Hashtag fence sitter.
Exactly, that was really unhelpful advice. Thank you.
As occasional guest, I thought the two-word reviews always were a good idea. I thought they did actually test you to come up with something.
Yeah,
suitably sort of haiku like.
I think that they will probably return. We will. Yeah.
What about quick draw review? We could have like gun sounds. Pew pew.
Yeah, I'm trying to
less
to give
four
myself
syllables.
I'm trying not to give myself more work.
Two-word reviews, as long as one of them is obscene. That could work.
Yeah, it could. It could. Actually, just in other news, late this afternoon we got the word back from iTunes that we have been accepted. We are officially an iTunes podcast now. So that approval process has gone on successfully. And I was looking at the charts for what are the successful podcasts around the world, in New Zealand, in Australia, in their TV and film section. And in Australia, 4 out of the top 10 podcasts are Game of Thrones podcasts.
And you just said Game of Thrones, so we could probably tag it.
I just said it. Exactly. I'm gonna add Game of Thrones to our keywords.
Yeah.
And watch the listeners roll in. Right. Anyway.
I will tweet us.
I'll promise at this point that every film I review for you, I will say either they reminded me of someone in Game of Thrones, they were a little bit like somebody, they would have gone well in Game of Thrones, I think. Once Google goes oral, we can really pump this baby, can't
we? Totally, exactly.
Or if you can throw down like a Cersei-worthy burn, you know.
Yeah.
She's great.
All right.
Such a kid.
is that the full extent of our mailbag?
Well, that's a selection. Yep. That's a selection for this week.
No, that's good. And because we're not going to have a Facebook page. Really, Twitter and Letterboxd will be the places that you should interact with us, or you'll be able to go to comment on our website. We got a comment on the very first episode from your mum.
What did she say?
She'll find it for you. Here I am passing on the
long time listener, first time caller. It's Katie's mum. .com.
Hold on one second while I look this up. Yeah.
So, my mum
would have listened, was watching Game of Thrones.
Here we go. So if you go to funeralsandsnakes.net/Rancho Notorious, you can skip all of the other Funerals and Snakes stuff and just listen to the podcast.
Are you a .net?
I am a .net because I have no intention of making any money.
I was going to say, that's why I couldn't find you, you cheapskate.
Here we go. Brenda Carruthers, 2 thumbs up for Dan and Kaylee. Love the new show and so great to hear the news, reviews and humorous banter again.
Oh.
Yes, to bringing back the two-word review. So that's one vote definitely there.
I think that's 3 votes.
Yeah, congratulations on the pilot and looking forward to show number 2. And here we are. So.
Yes, thanks, Mom.
P.S. I did actually give birth to one of the hosts.
So, time to move on and get an up... Settle.
Sorry.
Time to get an update on what the world has been watching this weekend. So, we'll start with New Zealand, hometown, and... Mm-hmm. What have you got there for us, Katie?
Right. Well, in number 5 down from 4, X-Men Days of Future Past. In 4 down from 3, Maleficent. 3 down from 2, Edge of Tomorrow. 2 down from 1, Fault in Our Stars. And opening in the number 1 spot, 22 Jump Street.
Hey!
I'm actually a bit surprised.
Imagine if there was a Game of Thrones movie. That would be right up there, wouldn't it?
And look, now, if you look at number 10 on that list... There's a film that I'd never heard of before called Holiday, A Soldier Is Never Off Duty.
Can we also note that the distributor is called Mind Blowing Films?
I know. Isn't that awesome? Graham,
number 10 on the list is a film that none of us have ever heard of.
That's right.
Let me pass
it here. So it's, what is it, Bollywood or Chinese market? Or
I don't know. The distributor is called Mind Blowing Films.
Right. Oh, that's the name of the distributor, not the review. Awesome.
holiday. A soldier is never off duty. It made $26,000 this week. That's
all
it takes to break
seen
into
this
the top 10.
Or knows anything about this, please tell us.
I'm just it's got to be Auckland market, Bollywood, or Chinese market.
Yeah, or Korean or something
Korean,
like that.
Yeah.
But still, a mystery to us. And yes, please help us out because we don't like not knowing stuff.
How cool that something that is, I'm going to say niche immigrant market, is now capable of getting to the top 10 in the country. Mm-hmm. I find that really interesting and really promising for the future of distribution of good movies in this country.
Indeed.
From countries other than, you know, English-speaking countries.
Let's look at Australia now, and talking of English-speaking countries, just about. Number 5 on the Australian box office last weekend, Blended, which came out a week earlier than it did here. We got 22 Jump Street a week earlier than them. They get Blended a week earlier than us. Who knows what the rationale is behind
don't
that
want to open those against one another.
Nice. Number 4 in Australia, Maleficent. Number 3, Edge of Tomorrow. And number 2, only in previews, actually, How to Train Your Dragon 2. So it gets go straight into number 2 only on the strength of its sneak preview weekend.
So I'm guessing Australian box office is they must quantify in the same way as we do our TV watching. Like, it's not actually the truth. they look at like certain cinemas and count. They don't count.
Oh, it's like a Nielsen sample.
Exactly, right. But they're not counting every seat in every cinema. They must be just counting the cinemas.
Well, it's all about
that
the dollars.
Preview in Game of Dragons.
This is a remarkably specific.
That wasn't even intentional. How to train your dragon.
How to Train Your Thrones.
Yeah. And I'm really looking forward to that too, because I thought the original How to Train Your Dragons was much more fun than Avatar in half the length.
I'm looking forward to this, to How to Train Your Dragon 2, because it looks like Game of Thrones. And I'm not even joking and throwing that in, because we're, you know, trying to get that on
the internet.
Did you spot
hits.
How the first one was basically the script, the plot of Avatar, but just stripped of all the pretense and just straight down to what everyone wanted to see, which is the kid get on the bunch of the back of the dragon and fly.
And fly, yeah.
And it was all done in 90 minutes, not 6.5 hours.
Number 1 in Australia, The Fault in Our Stars. And no, it can't be a sample based thing, because it's a really strikingly detailed amount, dollar amount. $8 million and $97,217. $8 million, you know, it's like that, right. They must be counting the actual money.
Okay, I guess, I mean, How to Train Your Dragon must have had a big preview weekend. Yeah.
Oh, totally.
Good for them.
And because that's also riding on the back of a big stage show.
Is there a stage show?
Yeah, it's like the Walking with Dinosaurs thing with the animatronic thing. Well, they're doing they did a How to Train Your Dragon version of
True that. Bros. No, I did know that.
They had it at Vector.
Yep.
Yeah.
I had a dream last week that I was a theatrical impresario and really killing it in New York. And the film I was, and the show I was putting on was Texas Chainsaw Massacre on ice. And the more I think about
Sign
it, the more I go,
up.
That would be wicked.
Yep.
Take my money.
Yeah.
What's happening in America? What have they got to say for themselves?
Well, all of North America, US and Canada, all mushed together. In at number 5, The Fault in Our Stars, down from 1. Boom. 4, Edge of Tomorrow, down from 3. In the third position, Maleficent, down from 2. And opening at number 2, How to Drain Your Train Your Dragon
how to
2.
Not How to Drain Your Dragon. That's so much less pleasant to watch with the children.
And in the number 1 spot, 22 Jump Street.
And in the UK, a number 5 is Oculus. I'd never heard of this. What is Oculus?
It's something to do with Google Glass was all I knew. So.
Okay.
Do you want me to look it up?
Well done, then.
Why don't you look it up while I'm counting down. So number 4, Edge of Tomorrow, Tom Cruise. If you want to know the Rancho Notorious verdict on that, it's in episode number 1, which is still available free of charge. Number 3 in the UK charts, X-Men Days of Future Past. Maleficent's number 2 and 22 Jump Street still for... I think the third week running in
really
the UK.
It really is a global audience. I mean, I'd really like to have a look at, let's say, Beijing and Mumbai sometime as well, just to see what the penetration of whether Western movies have like ultimately dominate those markets now as well.
It is interesting keeping an eye on those things, because in many of those markets, the release dates are way, way behind.
True.
So it's not always easy to compare. Like we mentioned this last week, that the number 1 movie in Japan last week was still Frozen after 11 weeks.
And in Beijing, it's Jaws. It was incredible.
Right. It's time to... Let's get serious, if we can, for just a moment, because the subject is now going to be comedy.
It's been like this the whole time. Deacon, on dishes and it still hasn't moved in 5 years. You're a cool guy, but you're not pulling your weight in the flat.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that I'm cool.
No, that's not the point, though. Yeah, you're missing
I know.
Flat meeting about how cool you are.
Nick, why don't you use the front door?
You want to draw attention to this house, hmm?
Got a whole documentary crew following you around.
You led a vampire hunter into our house.
Wait a minute, I just got my email.
What We Do in the Shadows, a film, a vampire mockumentary set in our hometown, 8 years in the preparation.
Mm.
And co-directed, co-written by Taika Waititi and Jermaine Clement. Taika Waititi of Boy fame and Jermaine Clement from Flight of the Conchords. These two were a comedy duo on stage in New Zealand long before Flight of the Conchords. They were called the Humour Beasts. And I think they won a Billy T or whatever the equivalent of the Billy T award was at the time. And it always seemed to me kind of a little bit sad that Flight of the Conchords got the international acclaim and the Humour Beasts sort of didn't. But yeah, here we are. They now unleash their humour on the international stage. This has got to be, for those of you who are listening outside of New Zealand, this is the highest profile local movie that I have ever seen. The publicity campaign, the marketing campaign for this film has been absolutely astonishing, and nobody's going to be able to match this. I think that it set the standard so high. No one's going to be able to do this kind of publicity again.
Definitely, it's set the standard for how well you can do social media. I think this has been an international gold standard social media campaign, run mostly by our own beautiful Anna Dean.
Yeah,
who's just everywhere you've looked, Facebook, Twitter, social media platforms you didn't even know existed. TradeMe, which is the equivalent of eBay here, has been swamped with sales of the props from the movie being conducted by the stars of the film. It's been gold standard publicity.
Yeah. Last Friday, Taika Waititi as Viago, his character, invaded the local rugby team, the Hurricanes, dressing room and ate one of the players. So
not in a good way. Speaking of how to train your dragon.
So the only remaining question is, is all of this marketing and PR genius in the service of something that is worth people's time and money? This is crucial this first weekend, in terms of getting that word of mouth out there, because there's a lot of big weeks coming up for other films.
Do you get the impression that if the film wasn't really bloody good, and it is really bloody good, that possibly the social media wouldn't have been anything like as enthusiastic as it is, and you're only going to get...
Do you think that they know how good it is, are putting everything behind it?
I've got a fair idea they would have seen it before they started the marketing campaign, and I think the enthusiasm that the professionals behind the social media campaign have put into it, I don't think they're going to be getting paid a lot, because there simply isn't a big marketing budget, hence the fact that it's a big social media push rather than a big TV commercial push or a big billboard push. I think implies that they really do believe. You can tell an advertising campaign in which somebody believes in the product, and I think that comes through loud and clear, as that they are overwhelmingly enthusiastic for this film, and I'd say as well they should be.
Yeah. New Zealand not well known internationally for its comedy.
Almost the complete opposite, actually. We're known as dour, depressive buggers.
That's right.
We're the Danish
cinematically.
The
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Cinematically, and yet, this is about as funny as it gets on the big screen, isn't it?
Really? I mean, you and me both see every major, every major Hollywood and English comedy released in the last 5-10 years, and this made me laugh out loud. Longer and harder than most things I've seen in the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
I'll put this right up there with the funniest films I've seen in the last couple of years.
Yeah, in terms of actual out loud laughs, as opposed to sitting back and going, yeah, that's funny, which we do a lot, I must admit, in this job. This is right up there with the Alan Partridge movie, which I saw last year. And that was a film that I saw at like 9:30 in the morning on a Friday morning in an empty cinema, one of those previews, and cried and cried with laughter at the Alan Partridge
film. I don't share your overweening affection for Steve Coogan, but I did think that was pleasant surprise rather than something I've been looking forward to for years.
Yeah. But this is funny. The gag per second ratio is pretty high.
I was going to put it up there with that amazing British black comedy about the duo that went on the caravan holiday and turned out to be serial killers.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever that was called. Yep. That incredibly funny film whose name I've forgotten. I thought that was magnificent. But only because I got the DVD completely blind, had no idea what I was putting on. spent the first 15 minutes thinking, oh God, Northern Kitchen Sink drama.
This is like Mike Lee.
And then somebody's head exploded. I suddenly went, WTF, I said to myself. And then pretty much laughed from beginning to end.
Yeah. So, it's a mockumentary. And those of us that have been involved in the 48-hour film competition, which Taika is a veteran of, the mockumentary genre was always... It was like you just sighed whenever you saw one because it seemed like a source of cheap gags rather than a way of really telling a cinematic story. And, you know, since Spinal Tap, you know, there's been some really good mockumentaries and some really not so good mockumentaries. And I mean, I was worried when I heard that it was a mockumentary. I was like, oh, really? Is this how can they sustain this?
I was kind of in two minds about it because, I mean, I'm aware of the original short film that was made back in 2005. Now, had that been spun into a feature at the time, then it would have been way ahead of the curve. I mean, that's around the time that Borat was coming out. It would have beaten Bruno to the punch. It wouldn't, you know, the world was not awash with mockumentaries. If it had come out a couple of years after that and the world was well and truly awash with mockumentaries, the fact that they've waited almost 10 years to do it, what I like was this film actually works as a satire on two completely different levels now. It's a satire of a vampire movie, well overdue, but it's also now a satire of the mockumentary format because they play very, very fast and loose and get very meta with the idea that they are actually making a mockumentary. So I think in some ways the decade that's gone by from conception to reality has actually been kind to them and allowed them to work new jokes in.
I think that's absolutely right. Let's talk about the craft and the fact that... That what they're doing, they've made look easy, but you just know that it isn't. You know, I read somewhere 150 hours of footage.
Yeah,
you know, of sort of improv footage in order to be able to get. And let's give them full credit for for producing a film that's under 90 minutes long. You know, how often have we wanted a film that we watch to be less? You know, to have 20 minutes less. In it.
Well, I can be even more admiring of this. I got invited out to Park Road Post where they were doing the edit and the sound mix and such like about maybe 7-8 months ago now. It was late 2013, and got to see what's called not even a rough cut but what's called an assemble edit, which is like the stage before the rough cut of the film, and that was an easy 2.5 hours long, and we knew then there was stuff that was laugh out loud funny, all of which seems to have survived, and there was stuff that was exceptionally funny but wasn't really driving the narrative. There was a whole plot line which has been trimmed away, and although I missed it, I'm kind of glad that plot line has been trimmed away. But when I found out that the final cut was under an hour and a half, 87 minutes, just full of admiration. I will say, if you're going to be over 100 minutes, you better have a note from your mother. But anyone who can get a film under 90, they get another star from me straight away.
Totally. Yeah, it's automatic. Mm. And we were talking before we turned the microphones on, before we came to air, about the soundtrack and just what a just a really unusual but still catchy. I think we've heard some glimpses of it in that little bit of audio that we played before.
The sort of pseudo Balkan valses from Plan 9.
Yeah.
The Phoenix Foundation Brains Trust have got behind it and put together a couple of original tracks. There's a piece on there from Cloud Boy, who were like one of my favourite Cult Dunedin bands about 15 years ago. I think either Tyke or Jermaine must have just liked the track and gone, I'll throw it in, I like it.
Yeah.
It's just a really, I can't wait for hopefully the CD or the download will be out soon, because it's just a really lovely collection of songs and tunes.
Indeed. Look, it's pretty much an unmitigated, success. Moderated, enthusiastic thumbs up from us. I mean, it's you know, if you're looking to spend 15, 16, 17, or maybe even if you go on a Saturday night and you want to sit in the posh seats, $25 or more, it might even be more now. It's ridiculous how much it costs to go to the movies, and you really want to get value for money, and you will out of this. And
this film's going to have a great life on sort of DVD and Blu-ray, and dare I say it, illegal downloads at some point in its future as well, as does Game of Thrones, you know.
Yeah. the big question will be how it travels, because it is a very Wellington story. I don't know if it's as Wellington a story as they think it is. You know, like there's a lot of local locations and a few in jokes, but I think pretty much everybody would know somewhere like Wellington, that they would get it, right? They would be able to...
I think it's one of the unalloyed joys of being a film reviewer, and you know this better than me, that you get to go and see every Lithuanian, Croatian, Hungarian, Chinese comedy made. And it's always it's a surprise and delight that something that's obviously locally specific can still be laugh out loud funny down here at the other end of the world. So I don't see any trouble with this thing travelling either.
Right.
I was surprised that, say, Whale Rider travelled as well as it did, and it travelled incredibly well. I was surprised that Boy travelled as well as it did, and it travels incredibly well. I think this will travel as easily as Goodbye Pork Pie. You know, there's nothing culturally specific unless you yourself happen to be a vampire in this. There's some jokes that only Wellingtonians will get, but I guarantee there'll be moments in it that Americans appreciate more than we do.
Yeah, true. And it may well be that those jokes that only Wellingtonians will get, they'll be the jokes that happen while you're laughing and not really listening. Yeah.
Because you and me know is that, include Kaylee in this conversation, is that there's gags in Lord of the Rings that only a Wellingtonian gets. It doesn't mean they weren't successful films, you know?
Yeah.
Like, we know about certain visual references in those movies that Peter Jackson sticks in just for us.
All right. So, opening all over New Zealand today, recording on a Thursday, so this weekend. Australian listeners, you'll have to wait till September. Huh. I don't think that there is any dates confirmed for any of the other big territories that we have listeners in, so Canada. No doubt it will arrive at some point. But yeah, keep your eyes on your local newspaper because it'll show up at some point and you don't want to miss it. Talking of Australia, every week on the show we're going to have an Australian correspondent to tell us a little bit about what's going on across the ditch. And this week we'd like to welcome Chris Elena. Joining us at Rancho Notorious is Chris Elena from Sydney in Australia. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. Look, the Sydney Film Festival finished on Sunday. Last week on the show, we got a few picks from Sam McCosh, a regular contributor to the show, and we're hoping that you'll be a regular contributor too over the next few months. Depending on how you perform now, of course.
Sorry.
No pressure. How was your Sydney Film Festival?
It was quite good, but to be very honest, there was about 8 films I had to miss because I'm making a short film in the process, and it probably was bad timing to sort of work on it during the festival. But having said that, I saw 17 films, and to be very honest, about 14 of them were pretty incredible, so I had a really good bout of luck for that.
Yeah, that's great bang for your buck right there.
Yeah, no, absolutely, and I think the lineup this year is probably the best I've seen it, to be very honest with you, and it has, there's a bit more of range, a bit more, you know, with female directors, female character-driven films, and more so protagonists, and a lot of the films that were on display, there was more of a focus, how do I put this, like a lot of the last year and the year before, they had a lot of genre films, and I say genre loosely in the sense that there are a lot of silly, fun films. This one they cut back a bit more, and they're very, you know, to the bone, very straight, rough films. But in saying that, they were pretty incredible, all of them. So yeah, I think it was really great, to be honest.
Okay, so back to a kind of film, an essential film festival, rather than a way to sort of just promote big pictures before they come out.
Yeah, pretty much. There was very few, you know, week before the release, we better plug it at the festival type films. There was one or two maybe, but they're both really good films. So I really agree with that. I think they really broadened it out this year, so it was good stuff.
Good stuff. All right. So what you mentioned female directors and female protagonists. What in that area really stood out for you?
There is a film called Black Panther Woman, which was directed by Rachel Perkins, who was the president of the Sydney Film Festival jury. She picked, she was one of the members to pick the winner of 2 Days, 1 Night, and she directed a documentary that got entered into the festival called Black Panther Woman. And it's a documentary, an hour-long documentary, about the first Aboriginal woman to start the Black Panthers movement in Australia, you know, picking it up from America, and it was just absolutely heartbreaking. That was probably the best thing I saw at the festival, and I'm hoping it's playing on ABC or just playing, you know, it's getting a TV run because it is beautiful stuff. And to be honest, my mission of the festival is to see every female-directed film in the lineup because usually sidelined to be, you know, and especially with general releases, there's not that many female-directed films. So that was my goal, and I think Black Panther Woman was the very best of all the films, you know, like male and female-directed.
Let's look at some of the other Australian titles, because I... Excuse me. As an Australian filmmaker yourself, presumably you're interested in your contemporaries and what they're doing.
Yeah, no, of course, and then some. My whole game is to make films in New Zealand and Australia, so I've got to see everything I can.
All right. So what stood out apart from Black Panther Woman?
Fell. Yes, that was part of the competition. That's hopefully getting a release. That was a really, really good film, but I don't want to give too much away, to be very honest, because I went in knowing nothing, and that's the best way to see it. Another film, in terms of Australian, I did see What We Do in the Shadows, which I'm trying not to reveal too much because I think it's incredible, but I don't want to say anything as of yet. And I think they're the real two standouts for Australian and New Zealand films, and again, Black Panther Woman, because that was Australian. And there was also The Red Fern Story, which was about a group of the Aboriginal community, how they had their own theatre group. And that was another hour-long documentary. I'm not sure if Rachel Perkins was involved in it, but again, that was a beautiful, beautiful film. So they're the real standouts to me.
Right. Well, what we do in the Shadows is a September commercial release in Australia, but it's opening all the way around New Zealand today. And here in Wellington last night was the hometown premiere, which absolutely went off. It was a huge party. Let's talk a little bit about your film. Now, I heard that you're not actually even making that film in Sydney, are you? Aren't you sort of dashing cross country and back to make that?
Yeah, well, we're shooting it in Adelaide, and the reason behind it is it's easier for us to access film cameras, 16 and 35 millimeter film cameras, as well as edit the film, on a Steinbeck. And we can only... there are places in Sydney to do it, but it's easier for us in Adelaide. And on top of it, a lot of our crew are based in Adelaide, and they've worked on other previous feature films, so it was, you know, too much of a great opportunity to miss up. So
I think you're really sort of letting us know that Adelaide's just that little bit behind the times. Is it a little bit sleepy in terms of the technology?
No, they're ahead of the times. They just seem like behind the times. Like, they like digital too. Like, what was it? Red Dog. You know, Red Dog came out of Adelaide, and that was one of the first Australian feature films to be shot on digital that made a gazillion dollars, and they're not behind the times.
I'm teasing you
a little bit, but I don't want to admit it too much. So
what's
me out.
Your films are short, right? And just give us a little bit of an idea about what it is and when we might be able to see it.
Oh, absolutely. It's a 20-minute short film about three teenage boys at a Catholic all-boys school who hear a rumor and then turn it into a story. But who they're telling the story to does not know that it's a lie and it's a fabrication. And then from that point on, just things escalate and get a lot more ridiculous. And we're shooting in August, the end of August, and we're set to have a print by November, because we're going to actually make a print of it first before we do a digital DCP copy. November's pretty much our goal. So
editing on film, is there still anybody around who actually knows how to do that stuff?
Yeah, there's about six, maybe five. No, one died, so five. And basically, most editors, you know, from 10, 20 years back have been trained on film. So they pretty much know what to do back and forward. They say it's a lot more challenging, but all of them, and next to the five people that we know and who have, you know, edited on film, have said it's much more rewarding. Like, to physically feel it in your hands and then to cut it and splice it, it's just, you get a better idea of what your movie is, you know, before you do when you're editing it on digital on Final Cut Pro, and yeah.
All right, so what's the film called, Chris?
The Limited.
All right, looking forward to seeing the results of all of that. Chris Elena, thanks very much for visiting with us at Rancho Notorious. We really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Dan, and I'd love the show. So, you know, please have me back when you can, and I promise I'll see more and better films, here's hoping.
All right, it's time for the news.
Thank you very much, Dan. So, in film festival news, directly from the film festival office.
The New Zealand International Film Festival, as opposed to any of those slightly smaller, less...
Yes. Direct from the desk of the New Zealand International Film Festival, it's Kayleigh Carruthers.
Hello. So today there was an announcement for the fashion, some of the fashion films that will be at the International Film Festivals. I throw my script on the ground.
Even more. Oh, heck.
More films about fashion.
Mm. Or more fashionable films.
Oh, fashionable films, sorry.
Both.
No, I've seen some great films. I've got an appreciation of a frock that I have only gained because of film festival documentaries about people that make them.
Well, there you go. Yeah. Well, one that may appeal to you is Dior and I, which is a behind-the-scenes documentary at the House of Dior.
At which point you say, is there going to be any fashion designer the world's ever heard of that somebody's not going to make a documentary about sometime soon?
Yeah.
True. Okay. And the other title is Yves Saint Laurent, not to be confused with Saint Laurent. This is the Yves Saint Laurent is a much nicer photo of the designer, whereas I've heard rumor that Saint Laurent is a slightly more negative view of the designer.
Oh, so there's two films about the same fella?
That came out in the same year, yeah.
Are these documentaries or is the...
Dramatizations.
So not actually not the truth.
Well, Yves Saint Laurent was...
Even the documentaries, that's, you know, you can't necessarily say that.
Very, very subjective point to make. You're quite right. Yep.
Yeah. Yves Saint Laurent, which would be playing at the New Zealand International Film Festival, is the authorised biopic by Yves Saint Laurent's long-term partner and business partner. Right. So it's the real deal.
Right.
Now, did you, either of you, see the really interesting documentary about Yves Saint Laurent that was centred around his partner auctioning off all of their art collection?
Oh, that was about Yves Saint Laurent. Oh, yeah. Yves Saint Laurent's partner, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. And it was using the art collection as a way into the
sort
story.
Sort of a springboard into the story of how I found it boring as batshit after a point, but it was beautifully structured.
Yeah, it was very clever. Very clever.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm. So those are two extra titles to look forward to.
Yeah.
And there will be more announcements over the weekend. So, you know, hold on to your butts.
We suggest you follow at NZFF, NZFF, if you're that way inclined, on Twitter for announcements, or you can sign up for newsletters and get the full details in your email box. But now, next week's a very big week for the New Zealand Film Festival, because Monday is the program launch, the full program launch.
Is that this Monday coming?
For Auckland.
Oh, okay, Auckland.
And Thursday in Wellington.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And Thursday's a day that we record the show. So we have to try and work out how we're going to cover this.
Live from the program launch of the NZFF.
It's entirely possible.
It's the NZIFF.
Exactly, like the space station. We will work out a way of doing it that will be...
so spectacular.
Brilliant radio, as well as informative.
Live from the back of a taxi on the way to the...
from the back of the Paramount.
Hello, my name is Abdul, I'm driving. That could be hilarious. Let's do that.
Yep.
Yeah. Interviews with taxi drivers on your way to the movies.
Yeah.
I'm sold.
What people said on the way home from the premiere, according to the cabbie.
We should do that.
Yeah.
Moving on. The first publicity shots have been released for our favourite film. Dan and I, our favourite film, 50 Shades of Grey.
Yeah.
Really?
On the other show, that we used to do, we paid close attention, didn't we, to developments in 50 Shades of Grey land, because, first of all,
Wait. Isn't there someone really interesting is it Mary Harron who's directing?
No,
who also did American Psycho?
No, it's the woman who did John Lennon.
Sam Taylor Wood,
yeah.
Now, see, she's going to do a really good job.
Yeah.
She will cut to the chase and she will reveal, A, the book to be the steaming pile of tosh that it is, and B, unearth some hitherto unexpected levels of socio-political comment that you didn't even know were buried under... Well, I've never read it, but
BDSM.
I hear it's dreadful.
Let us hope. Anyway, February next year it comes out. Right. So we've got lots and lots of...
Have you ever seen the short film by Sam Taylor Wood called Love You More?
No.
Which is about two 16-year-olds growing up at mid-1970s housing estate England, one of whom shoplifts a copy of the eponymous Buzzcocks single in order to impress the other one. All scored to that track. Sexually explicit and brilliant. Plus, it's got the Buzzcocks on the soundtrack.
Where would I find it?
You could probably find it through various nefarious channels on the interwebs. But apart from that, I'm not too sure. Okay. But you'd find
it'll be an extra on a Blu-ray somewhere.
You'll find it out there somewhere. Right. Okay. But it's a if that's more indicative of her actual talent more than that John Lennon biopic, she is exactly the right person to polish that turd.
Great.
Excellent. The International Buster Keaton Society has just announced that they've discovered a treasure trove of archival material relating to the film The General, including unseen, behind-the-scenes images, nitrate negatives, and even the only known copy of the script. You make the most difficult sentences, Dan.
Yeah, sorry.
I know
you know what the answer is. Write your own news.
Go on, Kelly. Oh,
I am busy. The original
No, I'm not.
The original photos and script will be on display at the International Buster Keaton Society's annual convention in Muskegon, Michigan. Muskegon?
Oh, look, you're the one who's as good as there.
I'm not from Michigan.
Well, you're from that bit of the world that's above Mexico and beneath Alaska.
Between October 2nd and 4th of this year, and a book should be ready for publication by the end of 2015.
I really like that news. I think that's wonderful. Firstly, how do you join the International Buster Keaton Society?
Yeah. And how do you go to the convention? I really want to go. Going to Telluride this year.
Maybe I should stick around.
Yeah, because it's the timing.
Muskegon.
Yeah. She's going to the Telluride Film Festival.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Did I tell you I'm going to Telluride?
Are you going to Telluride?
I am.
See, I didn't even know how that was pronounced. You know, I've been calling it Telluride all these years.
Oh.
Right, and that, ladies and gentlemen, is our news for today. So, as the evening marches on...
Well, colour me well informed.
Ladies, nobody cared about the Jump Street reboot, but you got lucky. We can't have! So now this department has invested a lot of money to make sure Jump Street keeps going. The only problem is the Koreans bought the church back, so we're moving you across the road to 22 Jump Street.
You two sons of bitches are going to college.
Okay, so...
You're going to college.
You go to college.
Yeah, Ice
Spread
Cube.
Yourself.
That's an...
Sorry.
And funnily enough, that's actually a piece of news that could have gone into the news today, but... I didn't, and that is that Straight Outta Compton, the NWA movie, has announced its cast, and Ice Cube's son is going to play Ice Cube in the movie about NWA.
What is his son's name?
It's not Popsicle, is it?
I don't have it in front of me. I didn't write it down, but like people can look it up. Ice Straight Cube's Outta Compton.
Oh, yeah, that's very sorry.
I'm going to look that up.
Right. Yeah. Right. But it's not Popsicle. No.
So, Graham, 22 Jump Street. You, like I think, were fond of 21 Jump Street. Fond enough to be looking forward to a sequel?
Dan, how wrong you are. You'll finish up on YouTube at this rate. I've never seen 21 Jump Street. Is it factual incorrect? Slip into everyone's.
I thought you watched everything like I did.
No. I was having one of my rare weeks off. I think I was off working on something else, and somebody else did 21 Jump Street. And I thought, is that the sort of film I'm going to go and see, even if I don't need to, and decided that I wouldn't. And then began to hear, like, weeks after, there was, no, you would have loved it. It was actually really clever. I was like, wait till it turns up on TV2 on 8:30 on a Friday night, and then I'll be at the pub. I've managed to completely avoid 21 Jump Street. Went along to see 22 Jump Street out of sheer contractual obligation. Loved it. And I think possibly because in that way you do when you're expecting to see absolute shite, and because you don't know any better, and it turns out to be a good film. That's my happiest moment. About 5 minutes in, I thought,
these people know what they're doing.
Well, I thought, fuck me, I just laughed. Where did that come from? And about 5 minutes later, I laughed again. And then you begin to appreciate they all know what they're doing. The filmmaker has got absolute, utter self-awareness of the fact that this is the unexpected, unwanted sequel to the reboot of the franchise that nobody wanted in the first place. And they derive all their really good jokes come strictly out of that.
And
it's a clever film.
It is a clever film.
Ice Cube sends himself up something savage. Channing Tatum is and always has been a magnificent comic talent.
It took a long time, didn't it, for people to realise quite how what Channing Tatum's strengths were.
Magic Mike.
Actually, 21 Jump Street was before Magic Mike, so I think that there was a bit. There was something there.
Yeah.
But I remember describing him. There was a film called Fighter where he played a New York
fighter
kid. Boxer thing.
He was all right in that too.
He was all right in that in a pretty average film, but I remember describing him as he had the potential to be the Steve McQueen of the generation whose underpants hang out the back of their trousers.
He suffers from dumb blonde syndrome because he's so good looking that he's always going to get cast as a place to temporarily hang a shirt. And in some of his more adult roles, a place to temporarily hang a pair of undies.
Hmm.
But it doesn't mean he's actually not a smart cookie and that he can't act. I mean, look at Matthew McConaughey's career.
Hmm.
No one would have believed that there was an Academy Award winner lurking underneath that torso.
Yeah.
And he basically had to wait till he was 45 years old before anyone would let him play the sort of roles that he actually could. I'm not saying that Channing Tatum is a Matthew McConaughey in the waiting, but it's like, in the same way, when you find out that Paris Hilton's gone back to university and she's studying astrophysics, that's the surprise you get when you see Channing Tatum in a film in which he can actually act.
Yeah. This film's directed by Phil Lord and Christopher Miller, who are best known for the Lego movie, right?
Yes.
So that's two movies in a year by these guys that are going to make an absolute
How did
shit
they
ton
find
of money.
The time? How do you find the time to make the Lego movie? And I mean, they must have knocked off 22 Jump Street in their lunch breaks.
Well, there's two of them.
And admittedly, at times it does look a bit like they've knocked it off in their lunch breaks on the Lego movie. But at the same time, funny, smart, funny film.
Yeah, there's one moment where there's a car chase near the end of 22 Jump Street where our heroes are driving one of those stunt football helmet shaped cars, that
sort of a golf cart thing. Yeah,
and they're being chased with the big four wheel drive with the villains, and they go past the Benjamin Hill School of Film and Television Arts, and the Benny Hill music starts.
Yeah, the Yakety Sax cuts in for a second.
Yeah, just for a moment.
I'm sure I was the only person in Reddings that night old enough to get that reference, and I snorted and went, "Why did that?" I mean, just. The quarter of a day it would have set up that shot must have cost somebody $100,000, and they thought it was worth telling that joke for that price.
Yeah,
and it was. God damn it!
Indeed.
Yeah.
I've got one question for you about this film, and that is the themes, I guess, of I hesitate to use the word bromance, but of male friendship, male bonding. And that it's, you know, that it's okay, you know, that it's okay to love your best mate and to want to be partners. And there are lots of innuendo jokes in there, you know, and you'd like to think that everybody involved had a fairly elevated view of what they were trying to do or the message that they were trying to put across, except that everybody in the cinema that I watched it with just giggled in a kind of homophobic way.
Yeah.
And I wonder whether, you know, because this supposedly this is a film that really knows it takes a position on stuff and knows that it's trying to send a positive message and what have you, but is it sending that positive message if the audience is really just going to respond in giggly homophobic?
Well, I think the first thing you have to acknowledge is that the entire North American market is nothing but a seething mass of repressed homosexuality. I mean, it's just so obvious. Every film they make is about a man either fondling a gun or making homophobic jokes. I mean, the homophobia is the great wellspring of what we laughingly refer to as American humor the last sort of 10, 15 years. I mean, this is an incredibly repressed society that at the same time still like congratulates itself and pats itself on the back every 5 minutes for being incredibly liberal and tolerant, when it's obvious to any sane observer, like anyone not North American, that it's a very illiberal and very not tolerant society completely. So I think, what was I talking about? Bromance. I think the reason that
Is it okay that people were basically laughing in a homophobic way at a film that was trying to do something else?
I think the film derived its clever laughs from, if I can coin a phrase, sticking it up the homophobes, but probably did it in a way that was too clever for a lot of homophobic people to realise that actually they were, for now, the butt of the joke.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean it's a wasted effort.
No, maybe not. I did feel uncomfortable around it, though.
I think a lot of the humour in 22 Jump Street probably is pearls before swine. But that just that doesn't make the pearls not beautiful things, you know?
Right. Yeah, and all of that is true. And on the basis of Channing Tatum and those directors, and the fact that it is, and the closing credits, if they were a short film on their own, would
have won the 48-hour.
Yeah, just the most fantastic, knowledgeable, witty closing credit sequence.
It's a very, very self-aware, funny film that also works on a real dumbass redneck level if you're a dumbass redneck and you just want to see a comedy.
Indeed. Mm. All right. So that's 22 Jump Street. Now, a little bit earlier on today, I spoke with David Geary, who's a former Wellingtonian, now living in Vancouver in Canada. He was a well-known playwright and actor here in New Zealand, and he has just been offered the role of lecturer in Indigenous film at Capilano University in Vancouver, among other things. And he's also doing, he was telling me he's going to be doing a master's in creative writing, which he could be teaching, let alone doing.
Rachel, who we had on the show, who covered Comic-Con of the show we used to do, she's an alma mater of Capilano, so I know that university well.
Right. Well, David Geary went to see Oliver Stone give a presentation at the Vancouver Biennale last week, and it was a very interesting event to be at. So I spoke to him about it, and well, here he is. David Geary, thanks very much for joining us on Rancho Notorious. It's a pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you.
David, you spent a very interesting session with an Academy Award-winning writer-director by the name of Oliver Stone the other day. That he was visiting Vancouver. What was the reason for his visit?
He was receiving an award at the Vancouver Biennial, which is a big public art show, and they've just started a film part to that show, so they decided they would get someone who was big, and they got Oliver Stone. He's also heavily promoting his documentary series Untold History of the United States, because it's not being shown on any public TV stations in the United States. They can't even really talk about it. But it's having big DVD sales now. It's actually, one of the very interesting facts he said is that on the black market in China, it is the top number one seller. So he was quite happy about that. But it's been hard for him to get the word out because no one wants to hear his kind of version of American history.
Well, that's true, but he's been pushing this barrow for a long time. You know, his first films in the 1970s were his first film credit was for a film called Last Year in Vietnam. He's a Vietnam veteran, and his since then he's always had a fairly alternative left field view of American politics and American foreign policy, and we saw the result of that with films like Salvador and Platoon. The film of his that I would really love to see and hasn't emerged is his documentary about Fidel Castro, which is the kind of film that pretty much stops your career in its tracks, I would imagine, in Hollywood.
Oh, he's had his career stopped several times. I think that's what was interesting. When you sat down with him, you realised that he'd done so many things and been called a liar so many times. I mean, JFK is his big one, where he was called a liar. And he spent a long time trying to vindicate himself. And he feels he has been, because an act of Congress actually revealed a whole lot more information that showed that he wasn't making stuff up. But he, I think that was one of his things that with this untold history, he's actually got a book, 750-page book, which everything is fact-checked, which is, everything is has a source written down. So he wants to make sure that people can go and find out what he's talking about. And he was very passionate. I found him, like, inspiring. I kind of went along going, I haven't seen an Oliver Stone film in a long, long time, and I sort of didn't think he was very relevant. And then he came on, and he was amazing. And when you put together all the films he's made for over a long period of time, like, you forget that he wrote Midnight Express, that he was Natural Born Killers, that he wrote Scarface. You know, he has this incredible career, and he just keeps wanting to make films that make a difference. He's actually working on Edward Snowden film next.
Right. Did he tell you very much about that project? Because there are competing Edward Snowden projects now. Isn't there a bit of a race to get that story on the screen?
Well, I'm sure there's going to be a lot of different versions of that. But obviously Oliver Stone carries a certain weight to it. I mean, when you were talking about his first film last year in Vietnam, he showed that film, which was his student film. And it was very personal. He was in it. He actually appears naked in it. He's a Vietnam vet lying in his bed, unable to sleep. And he takes all his Vietnam military awards off the wall. And then he goes on a ferry past the Statue of Liberty and throws them in the water. And then he climbs what you think is a motorway thing, and he possibly is going to kill himself. So it's very personal. And then I saw this film and was like, that's kind of what he's been doing the whole way along. It's like going, these are the things that everyone says about American heroism, but really the reality is totally different. He talked about coming out of Vietnam and feeling like an animal, that he was basically had been on patrol all the time, worried he was going to die with his eyes open, not sleeping, and he came back to America and just felt like an animal. And it took a woman, his first wife, to kind of make him a human being again. And he's been telling a similar story, I think, over and over with Platoon and 4th of July. He's trying to make us realize there are other stories going on, not the traditional mainstream narrative.
No, but it's also about the dehumanization, I guess, of American politics and society in terms of the dehumanization of the of those people who are pressed into service to support the status quo, whether it's in the battlefields of Vietnam or those people sort of serving the big business in Wall Street. You know, like he's always tried to keep in mind the effect of on the little guy of the big decisions.
Yeah, actually, to be one of the people that he brought up a lot was Hemingway, which was really interesting. And he said, you know, he grew up loving literature. He was actually into the macho idea of what Hemingway was, and you know, Hemingway went as a journalist to war, and he actually looks a bit like Hemingway now. But it made me think his real theme is, what is a real man?
Right.
Like, what is a real man? Like, he considers Edward Snowden to be a real man. He said it's very remarkable to have a young man with so much conscience who's willing to put so much on the line. And that's what real sacrifice is about, being able to stand up and say, this is wrong, and I don't care how much they throw at me and how I'll never see my family again. This is actually wrong. And that was a kind of a constant theme, I think, that runs through his work. What is a real man, and how can you be a real man?
The Untold History of the United States, this new TV series that he's made, he can't get it screened in the United States. How did he get it funded? How did he get it made?
He got it funded, I think, through private investors, actually. And it's paid off now with DVD sales.
Private investors familiar with the Chinese illicit DVD market, presumably.
Well, I don't know. I mean, if you go online, you can see it exactly. He didn't talk a lot about the funding of it. He just said that was like the most ambitious thing he'd done. He'd done it. He'd spent a long, long time working on it, and he's really proud of it. Like, I think he's getting to that stage in his career. He said, look, I'm really tired. And I counted up on IMDb. He's directed 22 movies. So he's got to the stage where directing another movie is just like, oh, my God, I've got to get up in the morning and go through all that again. So I think he's at that stage where he wants to make things that really matter, and this documentary series really mattered to him. So I think that's why he's going to places and trying to promote it, because he really believes it. The one thing I would say about it is, if you've actually read a lot of stuff around similar stuff over the years, there isn't, to me, a lot of stuff that's totally new. Like, I remember being at high school when someone gave me the book None Dare Call It Conspiracy and being blown away by it in the early 80s, and it was about how after the Second World War there were no enemies, and so Russia had to be created as an enemy that you could then start a Cold War, which would need arms. So that idea has been around for a long time, but what he's doing is getting it out there and also trying to give it a historical context way back 100 years or so, to say, this is why we're in this situation. And he's not making Obama to be any better either. He's just saying Obama's the latest version. I mean, him and Michael Moore obviously share some similar ideas too. I think if you've seen Michael Moore films, you'll be familiar with the same kind of territory.
Yeah, the same political territory, but I'm hoping fewer sort of stunt sequences and gags.
This is actually old school. This is like a Ken Burns documentary. It's archive footage, voiceover, and it's a serious documentary, I think, is what he's trying to go. And I think for some people who haven't ever heard these other versions, I think it's going to be the thing that changes their mind or blows them away. I think it's going to be that thing that people, high school kids, will go, you should check this out. You should find out what was really happening. You know, let's not, like the movie that he really hated most lately was Lone Survivor with Mark Wahlberg. He said that's like the Black Hawk Down. And he'd gone back and read all the military reports about both those movies and just thought they were total bullshit. And he talked about American exceptionalism. He said, we've got this thing where we want to make out that one GI takes out 40 guys, dies nobly. And they just keep making this movie, and it keeps feeding these young guys who and girls who want to join the military that they're going to be that hero. And so he was really down on those kind of movies. And I think it's a propaganda, you know. It's you're totally trying to make young people believe that's the heroic side of being a soldier, and it's not.
Mm. David Geary, thanks very much for visiting with us at Rancho Notorious. We really appreciate it.
Hey, no worries. Take care.
And that is our show for this week. Next week on Rancho Notorious TV's John Hamm hits the big screen in the Disney sports movie Million Dollar Arm. We'll be covering the Wellington announcement of the New Zealand International Film Festival program, whether it's actually on site, or maybe one of us will be on site and one of us will be here at home base. Who knows? We'll work out a way of doing it, so we will get lots of coverage of that. If you've enjoyed this episode, you know you can subscribe at funeralsandsnakes.net/Rancho Notorious, where you'll find a way to communicate with us via email or make a comment. We're now live in the iTunes store, as I mentioned earlier on, and iPhone and Android apps are not very far away. Sorry to say, they're not going to be free. They're going to be 99 cents. The people who are making them insist upon it, but it will be a way of getting your latest episode downloaded automatically. You can follow us. Oh, actually, well, you can do this bit, can't you? You're used to doing all the social media stuff.
Yeah, I'm excited about that app now. Jeez. You can follow us on Twitter at Rancho Podcast. That's RANCHO Podcast, all one word, on Twitter, where we will be tweeting incessantly about things that we think are interesting. And my pages are stuck together. You can interact with us on Letterboxd too. Our username is Rancho Notorious.
And the show is a Funerals and Snakes production. Season 1 is executive produced by Robert Catto, Random Films, Claire Queret, Mark Cuby, Anthony S. Pratt, Fred Thompson, and Matthew Buchanan. The theme music is Ennio Morricone's The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly by Los Plantronics, and you can buy that at the iTunes store. We're going to play out with some more music, and actually on the original script, I thought I was going to be playing you some music from Adam Sandler's Blended, because we weren't going to be able to review it, or we weren't going to want to review it, but we might as well.
Do we want to review it?
No, hell no. But people should at least know that it exists. But while the show has actually been on the air, been recorded, I have an email from the publicity people from What We Do in the Shadows, because I was asking them today about what the story is in terms of music from that, and they said, "Oh, the closing theme is You're Dead by Norma Tanaga." So, we could try and play some of it and see if it's what we remember.
Oh, you multitasking little whippet. Go on.
Here we go.
That's fantastic.
See you, everybody. See you next week. Thanks, Graham.
Absolute pleasure. See you again.
Don't sing if you want to live long. They have no use for your song. You're dead, you're dead, you're dead. You're dead and out of this world. You'll never get a second chance. Plan all your moves in advance. Stay dead, stay dead, stay dead. Stay dead and out of this world. Run fast, don't stand in the sun. There's too much work to be done. You're down, you're down, you're down. You're down and out of this world. talk with your eyes. Be sure that you compromise. You're dead, you're dead, you're dead. You're dead and out of this world. Hear the unloved weeping like rain. Guard your sleep from the sound of their pain. Long gone, long gone, long gone. Long gone and out of this world. When you smile and it tears your face, it's time for the inhuman race. You're down, you're down, you're down. You're down and out of this world. Now your hope and compassion is gone. You've sold out your dream to the world. Stay dead, stay dead, stay dead. You're dead and out of this world.